Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Well, legendary crooner Donny Osmond joins us for a very revealing conversation. Nice talk with a guy who's been in the business for 58 years. First, there's Geico.
Do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey guys, love the show. You're talking about the Munsters recently. Fun fact, maybe not fun, but a fact. The Munsters was the first married couple to appear on television in the same bed. Everybody else had those stupid twin beds like the Dick Van Dyke Show or I Love Lucy. The Munsters pushed the beds together. Love the show.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Good to know. Donny Osmond has joined us. The album Start Again, it's available now wherever you listen to finer music. And also, he's doing his Harris residency in Las Vegas. And tickets available at Ticketmaster.com. Good to see you again, my friend.
How are you, buddy?
I am doing well. So, Donny Osmond. Oh, man. Have you not... You've been gainfully employed, I feel like, since you were five?
Four, actually. Well, yeah, five professionally, but who's counting?
How did the whole thing start? I mean, I know you have a big family. I think you had seven brothers, one sister. Did I get that right?
That's correct, yeah. There's nine of us. And it all started on the Andy Williams Show. Well, even before then, my brothers were at Disneyland, and the Dapper Dans saw them and thought, are you guys a quartet? And they would sing songs back and forth. It was almost like an attraction at Disneyland. And they put him on a couple shows because Walt Disney himself said, you guys are great. And that's where Andy Williams' father saw my brothers. And then Andy said, do you have any more kids at home? And they said, we have this little brother named Donnie. And he said, let's bring him in. And I sang him a song. He said, oh, you got to be on television. And I had no idea how many people were watching me. I thought just a couple hundred people here in the studio, and then it just took off from there and never looked back.
Did you ever enroll in school and go to the fifth grade or do any of that? Ever have a run of like what would be called a traditional normal childhood?
No, the short answer is no. I did go to the second grade for a couple weeks, the sixth grade for a couple weeks, and one semester of college, and that was it. The rest was correspondence. I've never been to my grade school in Baltimore, never been to my high school in Chicago. So it was really, although I do have an interesting story. When back in the day when Disneyland would launch a new ride, they obviously didn't have social media. They didn't have the public relations that we have today. So they would do a television show. So it was Kurt Russell and the Osmonds. And we launched this new ride called the Haunted Mansion.
Mm.
And obviously, I was 10 years old, still in school. So they had to find a place for me to have school. There was a little room that wasn't being used in the Haunted Mansion, I think on the second floor or something. And I think I'm the only person on this planet who could say the Haunted Mansion was my schoolhouse.
Wow. Yeah, that was Kurt Russell, a lot of people don't know, was a Disney star his youth. He starred in those. You know, Disney made a whole bunch of, like,
the barefoot executive or the million dollar goose or, you know, Shaggy, the Shaggy DA. Like, I can, Chris, you can look for a lot of those, but they had like the Shaggy DA, like, oh, it's a sheepdog and he's a district attorney or something.
I mean, do you remember, like, do you remember Flubber?
Oh,
that was
sure.
At Disney, wasn't it? Son of Flubber. And
yeah,
it was Fred McMurray.
Fred McMurray. Yeah.
And I actually played saxophone with Fred McMurray back in the day.
Yeah, so they had their stars, and their stars would just go from one movie to the next movie. They had the, they had the donkey that kicked field goals.
Oh, yes!
Yes.
Oh, man, that's right.
What? I could think
of the Innocent Days.
Yes, and they had the Apple Dumpling Gang with like Don Knotts and Tim Conway. And guys, they just had a handful of stars, and they would just rotate from one film to the next. And Kurt Russell, who's, you know, may have had a career that's as long as yours. I mean, he's probably a little bit older than you, but that guy's been gainfully employed in the film industry for 50 years.
Absolutely. Do you remember the movie he did, Escape from New York?
Sure.
I always thought that was kind of a cool concept.
Oh, yeah. No, if you look at his early stuff with Disney and then you fast forward to, you know, Tarantino films. I mean,
that's right.
That guy's covered a lot of theatrical ground.
Talk about reinvention.
Yeah, oh my God.
He did it.
So you start off in this crazy era where there's like three channels and no information. There's nothing on, there's no internet. No one has a computer. No one has a cell phone. And somehow become a household name, because I remember the Osmonds had an animated TV series and Donnie and Marie had their variety show when everyone else had tons of variety shows back in the 70s. And it was this great time. But then, I don't know, we work, and you tell me how you experience this, but we as a society sort of work in cycles, you know? And so we have, you know, there's Vietnam and Crosby, Stills and Nash and all these folk singers and Bob Dylan and everything like that. And then at some point we go, screw this. We want disco. We want glitter balls and tight pants and we want none of this. We're going Donna Summer. Then we do that for a while and we go, you know what? Screw disco. We're going punk. Which is the opposite of disco, you know. And then they go from punk to sort of new wave, preppy. Now everyone's wearing suits and popped collars on their Izod shirts. And so seems like when we're in the midst of the 70s and it was all sort of rah-rah and everything, then there was the Osmonds. Then you got into the 80s and the Osmonds were squares. Like, you didn't want to be associated with those guys. We want to hang out with the cool kids. What was it like sort of having to ride that wave for 50 years?
You're bringing up a very interesting dynamic that, in my opinion, because I've seen it a lot and I've had to reinvent myself like Kurt Russell, is the short answer here is that the next generation doesn't want what their parents had. Mm-hmm. So they've got to come up with something new and different. And we went through a renaissance of going back to the 70s. It's interesting because my youngest kid, a couple Christmases ago, all he wanted was a record player. And I'm thinking, what? You want to go back to the record player? And now vinyl is very big because enough generations have gone past that old is new again. It happens in the fashion industry.
Sure.
You know, we see everything's just because they have to sell product. They want something new and not something different. So as an artist, you got to come up with something new and different all the time. The best thing I ever did was disappear. I hated it. Because I couldn't get a record deal. I couldn't get arrested. This was like the early, all throughout the 80s. And then I had a song, that when I was on your show, back when you were with Drew, Dr. Drew, was Soldier of Love. Mm-hmm. It was a total reinvention.
Mm-hmm.
And then after working so hard to get back on the charts with Soldier of Love and Sacred Emotion, I made a complete left turn. And everybody's thinking, Donnie, you're making a mistake. You've worked so hard to get back on the charts, and now you're going to go to theater? Because I realized that dynamic that you call cycles is going to apply to me again and again and again. So I went back to musical theater and I did Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat for a 6-month contract that turned into 6 years. And then the cycle starts again. And then you reinvent yourself again and again. That's why Marie and I decided to stop Las Vegas. It was supposed to be 6 weeks, turned into 11 years. Mm-hmm. And we both looked at each other and says, okay, it's time. You know, let's close this on our watch while we're at the top. And then COVID hit. So we looked like geniuses, like we knew COVID was coming. But then I just opened up a whole different kind of show at Harrah's, where it's all inclusive, reinventing myself again. So something new and fresh. My new album is nowhere near what I used to record, even back in 89. It's completely different. But that's what you got to do, which is what you call cycles. It's just human nature.
What did you do, and did depression set in, and what kind of feelings were you having in the 80s going from, so you younger people can just take my word for it, that the Osmonds and Donny Osmonds were like the Jacksons and Michael Jackson. I mean, it was all pretty much straight across, sold millions of records, ubiquitous, had a Saturday morning cartoon, everyone knew who you were. I was a little younger than you, but everyone always said when I was 9, you look like Donny Osmond, and no one ever said, who's Donny Osmond? They knew who Donny Osmond was. It's the only good part of my childhood, you should know. But
that's funny.
You are one of the biggest, most recognizable, ubiquitous stars pretty much straight on through an entire decade, and then the 80s come in and we're cycling now, and now this is your dad's square band or singer or performer or whatever, and all of a sudden there's no contracts and maybe the phone stops ringing. How did you deal with that?
It was hard. It was very, very difficult. But
because at that point, you're not even old at all. Like,
No. I was told when I was 20 that I was a has-been. At 20,
has-been, right?
Yeah. And so I started when I was professionally at 5. So I've been around and I saw all these dynamics and I was learning it. It was very difficult to apply it because, the depression was there and all that stuff. And the rejection, because the rejection was replete. I mean, it was just every day. Donny Osmond, I love your voice and all this kind of, but nah, I don't think. I was signed to Quincy Jones's label. He was going to produce me. And he got a call from one of his radio guys. He says, I don't know how we're going to promote this on radio. And they pulled me off the label. I mean, it happened time and time again. And in fact, how Soldier of Love got popular is that they played my my record on radio stations without telling anybody who it was, because they were embarrassed to say it was Donnie. We're playing Donny Osmond music. And so they just said, this is a mystery artist. There's a guy by the name of Lou Simon came up with this whole concept. And eventually it was PLJ, the number one pop station in the country in New York, was number one requested record. And nobody knew it was me. And they wanted me to fly in and disclose who this mystery artist was.
What year was this?
I was
this?
Afraid. This was
1989.
In fact, they called it the comeback of the 80s.
Yeah, because Donny Osmond was everywhere all throughout the 70s. I mean, like I said, it would be Friday night, you and your sister, Saturday morning, turn on the cartoons. There's the Osmonds again. Everywhere all the time, and then kind of disappeared throughout the 80s.
But it was the best thing, Adam. I mean, because then you hit him again with something totally fresh and new.
Well, tell me about the reveal. And if people don't remember, it was a big video, and Donnie's out in the desert. And,
that was Sacred Emotion. Do you know Michael Bay, who is, Michael Bay?
Right.
That was his first video he ever shot to break him into the business was my video called Sacred Emotion.
Oh, that was Sacred Emotion. Off the
that
same.
Was sacred, that was,
what
yeah, that was
that?
The follow-up to Soldier of Love. That was 90.
Okay.
Right. But that broke him into the business.
That's Michael. That's a Michael Bay.
That was
Bay
Michael
video.
Bay. That was Michael. First entry into the business. And, but
so
anyway,
they're playing the record, but they're not saying who it is.
Yeah.
And again, for you and just for anyone listening who thinks, people lived a charmed life, you go from wanting to put your name up on a marquee to don't say the name of the guy because no one's going to like the music if they catch the name in a very short period of time, relatively.
Yeah. Well, I wrote about it. I wrote an autobiography, and it starts out by saying, I was just, a couple years ago selling out arenas, and now I can't even fill a high school gymnasium. Mm-hmm. And that's what I went from, those two dynamics. And boy, you talk about, you know, hurting your psyche. But I understood it to a certain extent. And then I worked my butt off to come up with new music, and it worked. It just absolutely worked.
How did the big reveal works? Let's go back to that.
I remember it was Friday. I think it was Friday morning drive time. And, you know, they did the big the drum roll, and also they snuck me in a secret way because everybody was wondering, who is this mystery artist? And, you know, it was George Michael or something like that. And they said, mystery artist, who are you? And I said, I'm Donny Osmond. And the dynamics that were happening in my mind at that split second, I mean, nanoseconds, was like, what did I just do? And what did I just do? You know, those two complete opposite ends of the spectrum. And I watched the lights on the phone because they had those little blinking lights back in the day, you know?
Yeah.
And it lit up like crazy. And that message went through the whole radio industry all across the country and said, we've got the promotion for you. And I was on a plane every single day to other P1, P2, even P3 markets, revealing who I was. And it became a hit.
Yeah. And God, what was it like? You know, I watched Donny Marie quite religiously. I love those formats. I don't know. They're corny. But
yeah, they're completely corny.
Yeah, but it's sort of satisfying. I mean, it's like, I don't know, comfort food or something. You know, it's like
yeah, but it doesn't work today, Adam. As you well know, not at all, because it is corny, and everybody's too intelligent, and they want the rawness of it all, and it is so highly produced.
Oh yeah,
I'm a little bit country. I'm a little bit rock and roll. Like, give me an insulin shot after that, you know. But it was great for the time.
Did you ever, I mean, obviously you were dutiful, like you worked your ass off, but
big time.
Did you ever, as a 19-year-old or a 16-year-old, like get a little rebellious or go, I want to go my own way?
There was no time at all. In fact, I was always on the road. I was in the rehearsal hall. I was on the road. I was recording. In 1972, I had released 4 albums in 1 year, 2 with my brothers and 2 as a solo artist.
And
4 albums in 1 year.
And now every time, and maybe I'm thinking back to the beginning of the Osmonds. Did you guys do all the voices for the Osmond cartoon?
We did.
I'm looking back. I'm picturing that. But it was always, and it was a trope, but it was a thing where it's like, Donnie would show up to town and all the girls would be waiting and they'd be chasing him, screaming, you know, and all that. And I thought, man, it just desired that way. I mean, big time, major teen heartthrob, back when it was a thing, like, you know, Brad Pitt's a thing and people go, oh, he's good looking, but it wasn't the throngs of young girls chasing him down the street. I mean, it was a thing. You lived it, but now, I don't know, you're Mormon, right?
Uh-huh.
Are you allowed to have premarital sex? Like, could you indulge yourself? Could you have fun with those girls? Like, how the hell did dating work for you?
Well, yeah, I guess I could, but I didn't. You know, I think that's why my mom and dad kept me so busy. But, you know, obviously had those desires, but I never did. I waited until I was married, which is kind of an anomaly these days, but it's just my beliefs.
How old were you? And how old were you when you got married?
As early as I could. I was 20 when I got married, and I was lucky. I found a sweet girl. She was 19. They say I robbed the cradle, and I was still in it.
Right.
But I became a dad when I was 21. But it was interesting because, and I think you can appreciate this, Adam, I had so much responsibility as a young kid placed upon my shoulders. I mean, I'm 15, 16 years old, and I have my own number one variety show with my sister. I'm having I have 3 careers going on at the same time. The Osmond Brothers, Donny Osmond, and Donny and Marie. I'm touring. I'm a money machine. And all of this responsibility is on my shoulders, and people think, you get married at 20. In fact, we opened up in Las Vegas at the Hilton when it was called the Hilton. And I remember opening day, we were going through the rehearsals and the stagehand walks up to me. He says, "So I understand you just got married." I said, "Yep." And he said, "Yeah, I give that 6 months." You talk about devastating. And he had no idea. I had more wisdom in my little finger than his whole body because of the experiences that I had in my life. And I said, "How dare you?" I didn't say this to him, but how dare you say something like that? But I was able to handle that responsibility at such a young age.
So
I pretty much grew up with my kids, you know?
Yeah. I mean, God, when you think about where people were at, go back to being 20. I didn't know what was going on at 20, but I didn't have your background, your experience. You're right. You were a very mature 20-year-old because you'd been living an adult life for 15 years straight by the time you were 20.
That's right.
And so when it was like all the girls and the screaming and the traveling and the touring, could you date? Like when you're, could you go out on a date when you were 16 or 17?
I dated, yeah, but it was difficult. And when I started getting serious with Debbie and I realized I want to marry this woman, I had to keep it quiet. I had to keep it very, very quiet because if the fan magazines found out about that, I would lose my career and everything would go to the wayside. And as soon as it was announced, that's exactly what happened. Everything fell to the wayside.
Yeah, so
careers, money, everything.
They had all those Tiger Beat magazines and all those boy pinup magazines, and it'd show a picture of Donny Osmond and go, you know, it'd say like, "Ladies, Donny's single, you might be next," you know, his next date or some fancy date. Well, once you're married, that theme goes by the wayside, right?
It does. It does. Yeah. And so it was again, you call it cycles. That was the next cycle of my life. And I, in fact, I'll tell you something. I hated puppy love.
And they called it puppy love.
I mean, it was a huge record for me. And I would make fun of it on stage. And I would just like, "I don't want to sing this song. I hate it." Because it was the very thing that was keeping me back from progressing as an artist and a musician. And finally, I grew up and I realized, wake up and embrace your past. I mean, it's easier to do that now that I've had other successes in my life, you know, the Dancing with the Stars, the Masked Singer, all those kinds of things. So it's easier to embrace the past. But I decided in this show that I'm doing in Vegas, I'm going to treat it with a little more respect. And I'm in such a comfortable place now, Adam, because I can look back and I can wrap my arms around a puppy love. And I do it legitimately. And they called, and I have the beautiful arrangement and the whole bit, and I treat it with respect. There's no putting down anything anymore. And it's such a great and comfortable place to be.
I agree. You know,
and not run away. And I look at Justin Bieber. I think someday, because I think he's inspired one of the songs on my album. I wrote a song called Life After Loneliness. I wrote that as soon as I saw this video, Lonely. I thought, no, there's Life After Loneliness. It's not a ballad. It's more a... It's more of a driving rock song. But I'm at a point now where I can just love everything that I've, including the Donnie and Marie show. As silly as it was, I played Captain Purple with the pies in the face and all that kind of stuff, the purple socks. It's okay because that was me. I don't have to run away from it anymore. And I think Justin's going to get to that place someday as well. And he'll probably be able to sing, "Baby, baby, oh, my baby," and maybe do a different kind of arrangement with it. Mm-hmm. But embrace it, as I've embraced my past.
Yeah, I wish Jimmy would do that with the Man Show, but okay. All right. Yeah, well, it's still, look, we've talked to so many people that have done that. They didn't like this character. Sometimes people feel like it was foisted on them or they were manipulated or whatever, and they get distance from it. And then at some point, time goes by, and there's some nostalgia and some waxing poetic. And it's interesting. I think there's a, and then I'll let you follow up that point. There is a kind of sonic and visual version of this, which is when there's a picture of you from high school or recording of you for comedians, it's like telling jokes earlier in their career. You hear it 10 years down the road and you go, oh, you cringe. You go, oh, no, I don't want to see that picture. I don't want to hear that voice. You get 30 years down the road, all of a sudden you're like, hey, I was a pretty good looking kid in high school. Or like, that was a pretty funny joke. Like there's this weird nostalgia that kicks in, but it's not good for the first decade after you do it. You get a little distance and you kind of come back and embrace it.
Adam, you're as guilty as anybody else, because if you look back at your high school pictures, you went through a time where you say, let's put that high school picture away in the attic and I don't want to see it ever again. Now you could probably look at it and show it to people. Say, look how dorky I used to look. Look at the hairstyle. Look at the clothes I used to wear.
Right.
Everybody goes through the same thing. But then you get to a point where you grow up and just embrace it and say, yeah, it's okay. It's all right. Don't worry about it.
Do you ever?
Let me just say one thing. Let me add upon that, exacerbate the problem nowadays, because when a comedian says a joke, everybody's so worried about their image and this, oh, I'm going to lose my likes on social, you know, because everything is so immediate. If somebody says something bad about you, well, it's the tail wagging the dog if you listen to every single person. I mean, you're talking to a person here that was ridiculed, highly ridiculed by the press. In fact, I love this quote. Didn't at the time. Rolling Stone magazine came out and said, when I was a teenager, okay, I mean, here I am trying to find myself anyway as a teenager, but they said the worst day in rock and roll history was the day Donny Osmond was born.
Wow.
I love that quote.
Rolling Stone.
Okay, I love you for saying that, because, you know, I love life now. I'm loving what I'm doing. And maybe you're right in certain circles. But when I find, you know, when Ozzy Osbourne comes up to me and says, because this happened to me when I won Dancing with the Stars, he said, Crazy Horses is one of my favorite rock and roll songs.
Wow.
So I kind of think in the back of my mind, look at Rolling Stone magazine and say, well, there you go.
How much did it sting at the time?
Oh my goodness.
I mean, literally, were you 18? Were you 17? Like, how old were you?
I was on the cover of Rolling Stone when I was 14 or 15. So it must have been around 16 or 17. Yeah, something like that. I can't remember now.
Do you have not so much regrets, but do you ever feel like, I was manipulated, or I should have been left alone to have a normal childhood, or I was, you know, you were worked. You're such a generator of income. And what happens is they go, look, when you guys are done taping Donnie and Marie, we have a live gig for you in Atlanta. Like, you got to get on a plane. And then by the time you get back, it's time to go back and do the voiceover stuff for the cartoon, and it just keeps going. I understand how this showbiz schedule works. Do you ever look back and kind of go, I was being used, or I'm angry, or I'm bitter, or I wish I'd had a normal childhood, quote unquote?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and say I never had those feelings. I did, because I was, like I said earlier, had these three different careers going on at the same time. And I was really dependent upon by so many, not just the family, but so many companies and so many individuals said, do this, do that, do that. There is one thing that I look back with a little bit of regret. Of course, you know, it's difficult to say that because I did my best at the time. I didn't just haphazardly say I want to do the worst job I can possibly do. But there were songs that I recorded on some of my early albums in the early 70s as a teeny bopper, as it were. I just like, really? Why that song? You know, couldn't you have found a better song? I remember recording songs like Lollipops, Lace, and Lipstick. I mean, excuse me?
Right.
And it's like, and then I was looking what Michael was recording. I said, guys, can't you find me some songs like that? And they really drilled in this teeny bopper thing. But then again, put yourselves in their position. Like you said, I'm a money monster right now. I'm churning out all this. I release a record and it turns gold. Why change? But what they were doing in hindsight was such a disservice, because had they allowed me to get a little bit more, because I went back home and I was listening to Tower of Power and Stevie Wonder and all these other bands. That's where my head was at. and I was recording rock and roll with my brothers, but then I'd go into a studio right next to the studio that I was recording rock and roll with my brothers and sing Lollipop's Lace and Lipstick. It was a juxtaposition of my career back then was like, you got to be kidding me. I wish they would have just paid a little more attention to the quality of the songs. I mean, there were some great songs, but some of them were just, yeah.
Did you have any, I don't know what your relationship was with Michael Jackson. It was the Jackson 5 and the Osmonds. Those were the two big bands. And, you know, a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
The heartthrob lead singer.
Oh, no, more than you think. I mean, there's 9 children in each family. Mike and I were the 7th child. Our mother's birthdays are on the same day. It goes on and on.
Really?
So Mike and I would just laugh our heads off.
Was there contact? You guys hang out, professional work, that kind of stuff? We were crossing paths, you know, doing gigs. Yeah, like
we did. We would talk quite a bit on the phone. And in fact, I remember going over to Neverland. And prior to going over there, I played I Wish Those Days Could Come Back Once More. I cut this track. And I played it for Stevie. I went to Stevie's place and I played it for him. I said, I'm thinking about playing this for Mike and doing a duet. He said, Donnie, you have my blessings. I love the track. This is going to be fantastic. So I go over to see Mike and I play it for him. He said, oh, this is going to be fantastic. He was going to take the first verse. Looking back on when I was a little nappy headed boy. That was going to be his part. Mm-hmm. And then I was be the second verse. Right. And I wish those days could. I mean, it's perfect lyric for the two of us, right?
Right.
So we set the date 3 weeks after that to do our vocals. And he calls me, says, Donnie, things are really hitting the fan. The press are after me. This is when things really started getting bad for him. He said, mm-hmm. Can we delay it a little bit? I said, absolutely, Mike. We'll delay it until it feels right. And we never did it. But it was going to be cool.
What year was that approximately?
Oh, I want to say it was, what year did he pass? Was it?
It's been 10 years plus now.
Was it 12?
I think probably 12. I remember looking it up recently. First off, you blink your eyes, you know, you think Michael Jackson died. He died a decade ago.
Yeah. Or it was a couple years before he died. In fact, the last time I talked
09,
to him.
09.
Was June, 09?
June 09. Of 09 okay. When he passed.
So, just before he passed, this was the last time I talked to him. I was on tour and my phone rings and I said, hello. He said, Donnie. I said, hello, Donnie. I said, Mike. Hi, Donnie. It's Michael. And we started talking and I said, Mike, where are you? He says, I can't tell you. I said, Mike, come on. You're talking to me. Where are you? He said, please don't tell anybody, but I rented one of the tour buses and I had to get out of LA and got my kids and we're in Phoenix, but please don't tell anybody. I said, Mike, I live about a 9-hour drive from Phoenix up in Utah. I want you to get in that bus. I'm done with this tour this weekend and I want you to drive up there. Nobody know your home at my house. I want your kids to swim with my kids. I want to give you some normalcy just for a weekend and then you go back home. He said, I really need that right now. And he never took me up on it. That's the last time I talked to him.
And that was shortly before he passed?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So you guys weren't, God, how old was Michael then when he died?
It's we're the same age.
12 years.
He was 51.
Yeah. So same. Oh, my God.
Yeah. 50. Yeah. Wow.
50 or probably turning 51.
50. Okay.
Yeah. And so, you know, I didn't know anything about it, and I would have assumed you guys were kind of rivals because everyone seems like they'd be rivals, you know, it was competition or whatever. But
it was, you know, Adam, it was kind of a professional rival because that's what Mike and I would always laugh at. We really laughed at the fact that my first record, One Bad Apple, was allegedly written for the Jacksons. Well, I said, well, Mike, your song, Ben, the Two of Us, that was written for me.
Oh, really?
That was my song. Well, and I was on tour and they had to finish the movie. So they said, let's get Michael to sing it.
If you and Chris or Dawson, you can play One Bad Apple. If you play that song, the part where you go, oh, give me
it one more try
before you give up on love. It sounds very Michael
Jackson-y there. Like, this could be an early Jackson song.
Of course it could, yeah.
Is this you singing?
That's my brother Merrill.
Right, and then you come in with that part.
And I come in.
Right.
Here comes the chorus.
Now listen to this and think Michael.
Give it one more try before you give up on love. One bad apple don't spoil the whole bunch, girl. Oh, I don't care what they say. I don't care what you heard.
I could remember thinking that was Michael Jackson or maybe the end of the Jacksons. It was so...
Well, you know, what's interesting, back in the days of 45s, they actually put the name of the writer right underneath the name of the title of the song. Mm-hmm. And the guy who wrote it was George Jackson. So it said One Bad Apple Jackson.
Oh, so that was going to be a Jackson 5 song. And you guys,
allegedly, that's what I was told, that the guy, George Jackson, originally wrote it for the Jackson 5. And I guess they passed on it or something. But we got it. And that was our first number one.
And Ben was going to be for you.
That was my song, yeah.
That's a beautiful ballad.
Yeah, I finally recorded it about maybe 10 years ago, maybe a little less, and finally sang my song on my album. So, and but Mike never had a chance to hear it.
All right, let me do a quick spot here, Donnie, and then we'll come back and get on with it with you. Trico, over a century ago, Trico was the first to make wiper blades, and they've been a step ahead of Mother Nature ever since. Trico engineers, they study specific driving conditions to make sure their blades are ready for anything. I don't care what Mother Nature throws at Trico. It's always up to the challenge. Whatever the weather, Trico wipers maintain maximum windshield contact. Also good when it's hot and dusty and whatever outside, and you just want to spray off your windshield going down the freeway and clean it up that way. No matter what your driving habits, you'll always find the right wiper blade for your vehicle. Trico. The future of wiper blades. Since 1917, over 100 years they've been doing it. To find a store near you and see the latest offers, you just visit TricoCatsAndDogs.com. That is TricoCatsAndDogs.com. All right, quick break, right back.
I got to call Trico.
Call Trico, and we'll be right back with Donny Osmond right after this. Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there, owning. Renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle your policies at Geico? Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com. That is a new album, Start Again. That is Donny Osmond, 18th solo studio album, first in 7 years, 65th album overall, 65th. Most people, they don't do 50 albums, Donny. You've done 65. Oh, most don't even do 25 albums.
Exactly.
No. What a storied career. And I guess you've always been a clean liver, right? As with the Mormon faith, right? And drinking coffee, booze, you know. I mean, you've seen so many careers just be ravaged by substance abuse, you know. Yeah. I mean, you must have seen it. Yeah. You've seen a lot. You've probably seen it all. How great was that you had this base to kind of carry through this career, which is a minefield for every form of addiction, by the way?
Well, I'm grateful for it. Obviously, I've been made fun of it all my life. But I'm certainly grateful that my parents instilled in me those principles. I mean, I obviously wanted to rebel and all that kind of stuff as a regular teenager, but didn't want to disappoint my parents. And plus, I really believed in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is the real name of it. Mormon sounds like a cult.
Sorry, LDS. But, are we allowed to say LDS?
Yeah,
LDS.
But normally it's the long version, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But it gave me a foundation, a base, as you said, to fall back on when times got rough, and it gave me respect for deity and gave me a purpose for life, and knowing that this is just a blink of the eye in time, that and things like my parents, I miss them tremendously, but I know I'll see them again. I have tremendous faith in that. I don't know. It's just a way of life for me. It's not just a religion. It doesn't hold me back. Well, let me rephrase that. It holds me back to a certain extent, because there's certain songs and certain shows that I haven't done because of my principles. Mm-hmm. So it holds me back in that respect, but I like it because it gives me those boundaries that I stick within, and I like it. I really enjoy it. But I got to be careful, because religion is such a personal thing, and I don't want to be a religious zealot. I'm an entertainer, and when people come to my show in Vegas, that's what they get, entertainment. They don't get a preacher.
Right.
I do that on my website because people ask me questions all the time, but that's really the only place you'll see me or hear me talk about religion, because it's such a touchy subject, as politics and stuff like that. I stay away from it, and I keep it in my own little area of my website, that if somebody's interested, then they can ask a question and find the answer.
Well, I have a couple questions.
Yeah.
You don't find them too probing, but I'm a bit of an atheist. I just grew up without anything in a sort of godless community called North Hollywood in the 60s and the 70s. Yeah. But I was curious, like coffee, alcohol, soda that has caffeine. What are you allowed to work on the Sabbath? You know, like, I feel like I understand a lot of rules as it pertains to Judaism. It's like, here's what you can do and here's what you can't do. But I don't know anything about LDS. Sorry for shortening it again.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Well, two words, lighten up. You know, I don't smoke, but I'm glad I don't, because of the health implications. I try to stay away from caffeine as much as possible. If there's a Coke sitting there and I'm dying of thirst, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to drink the Coke. And I have in my life, but I stay away from it because I don't really want the caffeine. Is it a commandment? You know, yes, in a way, in a book that we have called The Doctrine and Covenants, Section 89, it talks about being careful about those kinds of substances where you become addicted. And that's all that it is. It's just be careful about being addicted. I mean, we look at Lortabs and all the drugs that are going, those are addicting. Stay away from it. Are you going to die if you drink a glass of beer? No. But can you get addicted to alcohol? Yes. So it's all gets down to common sense and just lighten up. You know, everybody thinks, since you're a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, you got to be careful where you're walking, what you touch, what you say. No. I have the time of my life in life. I just really stay away from addictive things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. And addiction.
That's all it is.
Yeah, well, first off, you know, addiction's a lot broader than substance. There's sexual addiction, gambling, and
pornography, and everything gambling. Else. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they
are you going to go to hell if you play blackjack in Vegas? No. But are you going to ruin your life if you get addicted to gambling? Yes. It's that simple. Just moderation in everything.
Did you? Yeah, I agree. When you're circling, well, you know, the thing that's weird about religion as a non-religious person, you know, when you hear about Jewish people and they go, this is my Sabbath, I don't pick up my phone and I don't plug the computer in and I don't watch CNN, you know, and I have dinner that night with friends and family. You're like, yes, these are all super healthy things everyone should be doing. we look at it askance because the religion is telling you to do it. But it's like if you had a religion that said you should work out and watch what you eat, we'd all go, oh, screw that. But I mean, it's like, well, wait a minute. Maybe they're onto something here.
Yeah.
So circling back to Michael Jackson, you've known him since he was, well, you're the same age. Yeah, I don't know. We probably met him when you were 8 years old or something. I don't know when the first time.
We were 13 when we first met. Yeah.
And you see him over the years and you see him. Well, first off, you see him, you know, having this kind of career that is solo career. So he breaks away from his brothers and has this mega, you know, career starting 79, you know, 80. So, you know, he breaks away. So everything is, you know, Jackson 5, Osmond Brothers, everything is parallel. And then he breaks away right as you're being told your career's over, essentially, right? Which had to be,
that's correct.
Had to kind of, you know, twist the knife just a little more for you. I never really thought about that. Like the only thing that makes someone saying you're a has-been at 20, the only thing that makes it worse is kind of a contemporary just exploding, which is what he did. But did you notice he was changing? Like his voice was changing, his look was changing. Like, did you ever go, what's going on with this guy?
Well, really good question. I obviously saw it because I'm not stupid. I'm very observing what's going on. But the interesting dynamic that was going on in my life is that I knew Mike in a completely different way. And that's what I hold on to today. Granted, he went off the deep end. He made some really weird decisions. As they say, the air is rare up there. And he was breathing his own air. I think one of the biggest problems was superstardom like that is that you surround yourself with what I call yes people, and you can do no wrong, and you have no laws, and you have no rules. You make your own rules. And that's a very dangerous place to be. And that's what I think killed him, let alone that the pressure that a lot of people put on him for those final concerts. That's my personal opinion. But the business itself and the pressure of trying to keep up with this image that he created for himself. He didn't want anybody to surpass him. And that's what really took him, is the pressure of this business. But I hold on to those fun times when he and I just, without his makeup on, without his hair, without his clothes and all that, just plain regular clothes, we would sit in his house and we'd talk and we'd laugh and we'd just reminisce.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Michael that I hold on to. So, but I did see the changes and it really hurt me. Like, for instance, when he made that one last call before he died, I begged him. I said, please. Stevie Wonder begged me. He said, please get closer to Michael as much as you can. I said, Stevie, I'm doing my best, because we all saw it. And, but Michael was on a tailspin crash and he couldn't stop it because he had to climb those mountains. The next one was higher. The next one was higher. And how do you top Thriller? I mean, because Bad didn't do just as well as Thriller. Now he's a failure. No, look at the numbers of Bad. But in his mind, Bad was probably not as good as Thriller. And it would probably ate him alive.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, the nickname King of Pop, you know what I mean? It's like being called the baddest man on the planet. Like, it's a lot to live up to, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how do you top it?
Did you, here's a sort of philosophical question. Everyone in show business kind of goes through it. There's the way you look at yourself and what you know about yourself and your ability. And then there's how the industry and the public at large, or many in the zeitgeist, look at you, right? And so,
what's a zeitgeist?
The zeitgeist is in the air. The what's let's see.
The ether.
In the ether. Well, the zeitgeist is like, which way is the wind blowing, you know, politically, or, you know, what's around, what's all kind of around us now, you know what I mean?
Okay.
I think I'll look up the definition of
the spirit of the age.
The spirit of the age.
Okay.
Right. We're living, you know, we're talking a lot about the trans community. That's in the zeitgeist now.
Okay.
If we got hold of you in the 70s and talked to you about the trans community, you think we're talking about the car.
But exactly. Now,
you want
the Trans Am.
I want T-tops. All right. So I do want to know the first goofy car you bought, because when you turned 16, you must have got a Corvette and painted flames on the side of it or something.
You're going to laugh your head off. Do you know what my first car was?
Please.
A Chevette.
No!
Chevette.
A Chevette is the cheap, like, a Chevette is the, it's the VW bug of American cars, like the smallest four banger.
The VW bug is a step up.
No, you're right. The VW bug had some cachet. Look up the definition of cachet. No. VW bug was quirky, had something. This was the two worst American cars offered at the time was the Ford Pinto and the Chevy Chevette. It was right in the title. It's not even a real Chevy.
It actually gets a little worse than that. It wasn't even the Chevy Chevette. It was the Canadian version of the Chevette called the Acadian.
How the hell? You'd have 11 years of big time earning. You'd earn millions of dollars.
Do you know why I got an Acadian? I did a commercial for them. Marie and I did a commercial. She got an Acadian and I got a Canadian.
A Canadian commercial.
Yeah. That's how I got the
Acadian. They gave you the car. So the Chevette, essentially, the Canadian Chevette. What year? What year was it?
It would have been 76, 77.
Oh, God. What a pile of crap.
Oh, my God.
That is a car that a substitute school teacher drives. That is not a Donny Osmond type vehicle.
No, it's a substitute school teacher and Donny Osmond.
You must. Please tell me you got the Trans Am at some point or the Corvette.
No.
Was that part of the parents, the religion, the culture? Like, stay humble, stay hungry?
Maybe my parents, you know, because they isolated us from the opulent living, which, you know, we could have lived in mansions and Ferraris and Lamborghinis and stuff like that. But no, we just we didn't live that kind of lifestyle. And in a way, it's kind of cool because I didn't get spoiled, I guess, by the opulence of show business, because we had the money. We lost it all in 1980, but we had the money.
How did you? All right, I'd like to ask how you lost it all, but I also want to say, and tell me if this rings true or not. I have to deal with this to some degree. Everyone in show business has to deal. It's like, this is how people perceive you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's a bubblegum pop star. You know, he drinks milk when everyone else is out having cocktails. And
all depends who, what generation you're talking to. But go ahead.
Right. And he's not a real soul singer. You know, he's just a pop guy who's cashing in over in Vegas. And I notice you sing a lot when you have conversations, because I think what you're saying is I got the goods. I can do this. Like, I am good at this.
Because I sing and because I'll break out in a song.
Yeah. Like, it's a way of me going, oh, shit, Donny Osmond sounds really good. Like, he's not this guy you remember from Tiger Beat or he has. Now, I don't know if it's I'm not trying to insult you, but what I'm saying is like, I've been in that situation. People are in that situation where you think I'm this guy. I am this guy. I'm not that guy. I can do this. I'm good at this. Like, I have a really strong voice. You know, I'm a talented singer who happened to be really popular and on Tiger Beat and drove around a Chevette. All the ladies went crazy. But, and you know, again, you think I can't drink a tea because it's got too much caffeine in it, but I can do this thing. And there may be, because we've been talking for 45 minutes and you've sung like three or four times. And, but it's... Yeah. And again, it sounds like maybe I'm being insulting here. I'm really not.
No. And I could take it as an insult, but I don't, because, yeah, you could take it that way. And it's a fascinating question, Adam, because I could be trying to do this interview and proving, you know, I'm a singer and I love to sing. I could do all kinds of licks and all that kind of stuff to prove myself. But what's really interesting about this question is that you said I've sung three songs. Well, I don't even remember singing, because it's just what I do. And I've been just singing since I was four. In fact, you know, it's quite funny, because there's been times when my wife would be, and I'd be walking down the mall and I'd be humming a song and she'd kick me and say, stop singing. I had no idea I'm singing.
It's so ingrained.
It's just my life. You know, it's just who I am and what I've gone through. I've lost my voice twice in my lifetime. I had to have surgery. Same guy who got Adele back on stage, same guy who operated on me, Dr. Zeitels. And so I can appreciate the fact that I can even phonate, because there were times where I couldn't even sing. I blew my voice out.
Yeah. So the, you know, circling back, there's a version of you that's in your head, which is accurate. Yeah. And then there's this part where society thinks this or thinks that. And every performer has to deal with it. And there's some, I think there's some performers, it's kind of a pendulum, you know. There's some performers like Dave Chappelle. Dave Chappelle is a funny comedian, but there's lots of funny comedians. There's lots of guys I know that are really funny, but he has crafted something that makes us go, oh, Dave Chappelle, the guy's the funniest guy on the planet. Well,
he makes you think, too, while he's telling a joke.
Right. He's done something. And then we've also, as a society, you know, sort of elevated. He's a truth teller. You know, he's a shaman. You know, he's a blah, 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 blah. So there's a version of, and then there's versions of it where I know guys that are super funny and people go, that guy's a doofus. You know, like they don't get the same credit.
I said something a few minutes ago while you were asking the question, and that is, it all depends on which generation you're talking to. Mm-hmm. Now, you remember the cartoons. You remember the One Bad Apple, and you remember Puppy Love and all that stuff. The other day, actually the last couple of weeks, I've had teenagers in my audience having the time of their life. I had this little 8-year-old girl during this request. I told you about the request segment. Well, she was requesting something from Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. She had no idea about One Bad Apple. She didn't know about Puppy Love. All she knew was I was a peacock and she loved Mulan and she saw Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. She didn't have any other baggage that was weighing her down, saying, okay, Donny Osmond, you know, was my grandma's favorite.
Right.
No, I was her favorite because of stuff she saw. So it all depends on who you're talking to and the baggage that they have. Maybe baggage is the wrong word, but the experiences that they have of seeing you and hearing you when they were a kid or whatever time in their life. That's what they equate it to. You say Dave Chappelle. Well, maybe when he first started out, and they haven't seen his recent comedy, and they only know him as this, they think, nah, I don't like Dave Chappelle. No, look at the breadth of the career. And that's why sometimes when people get picky about certain artists and musicians, they're so narrow-minded. They're so, what do they call it, tunnel-visioned. Look at the breadth. Look at where they've been. Look at where they've come from. Look at where they are now. Then make a judgment call.
Last question, Donnie. So you said in 80, your family lost it all. Was that your career drying up, or was there some incident or some situation?
I think it was a combination of many things, two of which you just said, but it was the classic trusting advisors, losing your money, the Hollywood story of losing all your money because of bad investments and whatnot, and people spending your money without any checks and balances. And thank goodness my dad, because we didn't live an opulent lifestyle, invested in all these things in shopping centers and ranches and things like that. And he's had to sell all that stuff to pay all the debt. And we started out at ground zero. We were advised to take out bankruptcy.
Really?
And my dad, with the integrity that my dad had, he said, no, I'm not going to screw anybody. I want everyone to get paid. And we ended up with nothing, but everybody else got paid. And we didn't have to take out Chapter 11.
So you guys in that, decade, the decade of the 70s, the Osmonds and Donny Osmond, Marie, Jimmy Osmond, who used to pretend to play the trumpet on your show.
Yes. He's so embarrassed about that.
He should be humiliated. I was 11. I watched that show. I was like, there's no way that guy's playing that trumpet.
There's no way.
He's playing Flight of the Bumblebee on a trumpet.
And he goes,
yeah. We were on the show.
It worked back.
But then, you guys must have earned $50 million in that decade.
I think we lost $60 million back then. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was. Whoa. You put that in today's dollars and we cry over it because, oh.
Did you make $60 million in that decade, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I mean, our net worth was just, through the roof back in those days.
And then it was declare bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was tough.
Well, everyone's had their trials and their tribulations, kids.
Hence what I said, look at the breadth of what everybody's gone through before you make a judgment call on anyone.
Absolutely. Well, let me give you a plug, Donnie. Start Again, name of the album, and wherever you listen to music. And also, Harrah's Las Vegas residency. Tickets available at Ticketmaster.com and the website, Donnie.com. Thank you so much, Donnie. Always good catching up with you, my friend.
Good to catch up with you, too, Adam. Take care of yourself.
You too. All right, last but not least, there's Tommy John. Fall can be chaos in your pants, overheating 1 second, and freezing the next. Be ready for anything under all conditions. I'm wearing my Tommy Johns right now. Breathable, lightweight, moisture-wicking fabric with 4 times the stretch of competing brands. Tommy John doesn't have customers. They have fanatics. Over 16 million pairs sold, everyone. This fall, upgrade to what's underneath with the new Tommy John and luxurious soft loungewear. I'm wearing it now. It's cool outside. I worked to bed the last few nights. So damn comfortable. It's the best pair you'll ever wear. Or it's free. Guarantee. Right, Dawson?
Get 20% off your first order right now at TommyJohn.com/Adam. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam. See site for details.
Well, I'm going to be November 5th. I'll be at McGoobie's Joke House, and then that's in Baltimore. Then Philly, Keswick Theater, that'll be on the 6th. Just go to AdamCarolla.com. And until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Donny Osmond and Gina Grad and Paul Bryan. Say it. Mahalo.
That's what I think. Now, if you were a big girl, mm-hmm. I'd be hugging all up in you. Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You'll find him on Instagram and Facebook at Adam Carolla as well. Gina Grad's on the podcast, Easy Listening. Paul Bryan's on the Film Vault. We're all on the water cooler. And if you want to leave us a voicemail, do it at 888-634-1744. And get your tickets to see Adam Carolla. Get them before they're sold out at AdamCarolla.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? It's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on. Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Auto Parts.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.